Business owners, do you want an unfair advantage over your competitors? Do you want to dominate in your area of expertise? You are listening to Business Life Hacks. Learn to influence consumer psychology and shortcut your way to business success with tips, tricks, and hacks from award-winning digital agency, J Marketing.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Business Life Hacks. In this episode, we're talking about buyer psychology and what you can do to help your customers choose you over your competition. And this is based off of some new findings that Google has come out with about buyer psychology, which adds layers of depth to our own process at J Marketing of building systems for our clients that leverage psychology of buyer behavior to lead customers from the awareness stage all the way through to the sale. In the beginning of this process, the buyer becomes aware of your brand, and at the very end, they buy. They make a purchase. But what happens in that middle process is a messy, non-linear process. It's a lot messier than most people think about. So very few businesses understand this portion of the buyer process, even though it's the most important. And if you are one of the businesses who are leveraging that understanding, then you win and your competitors miss out. So I'm just going to read a passage from this report. The sum total of a shopper's experiences and impressions creates a backdrop of exposure encompassing brands, products, and more. Against this backdrop, purchase triggers prompt the consumer to enter a cycle of exploration and evaluation, gathering information and then narrowing it down. So if the first cycle of going from exploration through evaluation doesn't yield a definite choice, then they loop back, repeating that process as many times as necessary. Finally, all of options are evaluated, then they make a purchase, or they don't. Either way, the whole experience feeds back into their background exposure. So what are the three main points of this middle period that you need to leverage? One, show up at key moments of exploration and evaluation to win or protect your share of consumer preference. Two, apply behavioral biases to give shoppers the information and reassurance they need to exit the messy middle and complete a purchase. Three, optimize site speed, user experience, and on-site messaging to shorten the distance between trigger and purchase. So, Josh, could you explain a bit about how we normally think about a sales funnel and what parts of that are normally overlooked?
The sales funnel is fundamentally thought of as a very straightforward process, and I'll talk about it in web terms. You have a problem, you look to solve it with a product purchase or a service purchase. You go to Google, you find possible solutions, that's the top of the funnel. So you say, okay, I've got 10 to choose from. You go into the middle of the funnel where you start evaluating each of them against one another. And you go, okay, clearly this one is the best out of the bunch. That takes you to the bottom of the funnel where you pull the trigger and you go, yep, I'm going to buy from these guys. And when it's explained in those terms, it seems pretty straightforward. And most of us advertisers would actually think that way, except that that's not how it works. At J Marketing, if you've listened to our podcast before, if you've read anything that we've published, you'll know that we always talk about this algorithm we use that looks at, are we clearly solving the customer's problem? And more importantly, what are their frictions and anxieties in the process? And the reason that we look at that is because of the messy middle of the funnel. When we're evaluating all of our options, human behavior is to not want to proceed. It's to look for problems and feel anxious about the decisions. And that's what this report is all about. It's about how can you supercharge your offering so that it makes people feel at ease, but it also totally outpositions the competition and gives you a greater share of voice.
Yeah, because until someone kicks them out of that messy middle part, they're going to go through exploration and keep looking at all the different brands they can, picking up more and more information, and then narrowing down. But if no one's kicked them through to that last stage, then they're just going to go through that cycle over and over and over and over and over again, getting more and more exposed to more of your competitors. So you want to get them out of that cycle as quickly as you can.
And this is relevant for B2C and B2B buyers or sellers, however you want to look at it. The more complex something is, the more it's unknown, the more anxiety a buyer is going to have when they're looking at it. So if you're buying gum at the supermarket, there's a very low risk threshold. You'll just toss it in your basket and not think anything of it. If, however, you've been charged with, say, finding a company to renovate the office, which is actually one of our customers at the moment, well, there's a much higher burden on you. You're feeling a lot of social pressure and professional pressure to make the right choice. That's why there's the saying, you'll never get fired for hiring IBM. It's not because IBM is necessarily the best solution, but everyone recognizes them as quite reliable. And so even if it ends up being a total mess, you won't lose your job. And for a lot of people, that is a very important driver of decision making.
Could you summarize the takeaways from this report about how to get more sales from our ads and from our website?
They've broken it down into six areas. And a lot of these you will have seen before, but I love the way that this is broken down because it deals with common anxieties and frictions in the buying process. The first one is a short description of your product, showing what it delivers, and in particular, it's even better if it's versus everyone else. Now, you will have seen this before, I guarantee it. You will have seen one of these tables of product features, and it'll be your product versus someone else's. Yours will have ticks like, oh, it comes in green, this is the size, it does this, that, and the other thing. And the competitors will only have a few ticks. What that's doing is reducing anxiety in making this decision, and it's making the others sowing doubt into the head about the competition. So that's really powerful. Secondly, the power of now. A great anxiety that people don't think about is people don't like to wait. We like gratification immediately. So we find this even when we sell in a website. If a customer says, how long is it going to take? If we say too long, if we're like, oh, we can't start for a week, that is a reason why they wouldn't purchase. So the power of being able to deliver not just the product, but results right away, very, very powerful for both your website and your advertising. Dan, social proof. This is one that you're a big fan of. Why don't you talk about social proof for us?
Yeah, I love social proof and the impact it makes. This is basically recommendations and reviews. If you're searching for a plumber and you search plumber in my city and then there's one plumber comes up and you see that they have 2 3-star reviews on Google, and then you see another one come up that doesn't have any reviews, and then you see one that has 55-star reviews, 11 times out of 10, I'm going to choose the one who has the most and the best reviews. It can also be a social proof could be being talked about in the media, or if you have reviews on your website saying how great your service is. This is all stuff that lowers the amount of anxiety people have about purchasing your service or your product, because that social proof gives them comfort that they're making the right decision.
I'm going to add to that even more, and we've used this in web design very effectively, where if a client of ours has a whole heap of case studies, so let's use the office renovators as an example. One version of social proof is seeing what they've done for companies before, and then being able to drill down into companies that are similar to yours, either similar in business nature or in this case, have a similar office setup and structure and tastes and preferences. If they can see what you've done, that is a social proof that you can deliver it again. So social proof, really powerful, but it's different to authority bias, which is our fourth one. Authority bias is when someone who is very reputable is vouching for you. And this comes through really heavily when you've got doctors, medical professionals, building practitioners, people who theoretically should be on the front line of things and have seen it firsthand. they're going to carry a lot of weight. If you know who they are, like sports star endorsements, that's great. But even if you don't know who they are, often a little write-up saying Steve Bloggs, who was head of the industry for 20 years, recommends it for these reasons, it carries a lot of power. Dan, scarcity bias. This is something you and I, we laugh at all the time when we see websites with tickers saying this deal's only available for another 2 minutes. What do you think? Does that influence your buyer decision cycle?
Not anymore. It's maybe, if it's just that, it's probably a 10% or something, because I am like, well, what if it was true and it is only available for another 2 minutes? But really, what are the odds that I showed up to the website when there's only 2 minutes left? That kind of thing feels artificial to me.
And you would be absolutely right. You can't use it, and this is what's happening right now, as the only trigger in your arsenal. But scarcity bias is a real thing, and it actually helps to short circuit that messy middle. So it can be really effective if done tastefully to say free for this month only, or we've only got 5 of these left in stock.
Yeah, like I was buying a flight yesterday, and when I go on and it says select your seat, you know, if I go in there and I see that there are only 4 seats left on the flight that I want to buy because they've crossed out all the unavailable seats that are already purchased, if it was full, I'd go back into that cycle and keep looking at other flights and wait for a while. But if I see there's only 4 seats left, I'm probably going to buy right then because I don't want to miss out.
Great example. And now let's move on to the last one because it kind of ties into it. And that's the power of free. People get this confused all the time, but what can we give them, our customers, which is going to add to the value offer if they act now? So we're going to throw in free reports, free access to this portal, free, if you think about the old, in Australia they were Demtel ads, I don't know what they were in the US for you, Dan, but they were like, we'll throw in the free steak knives if you're one of the first 50 callers. It actually works. The power of bundling in something you weren't expecting is really, really strong.
And a funny thing that Google mentioned is that that works even if the free product is unrelated.
Yeah, bang on. So let's summarize this because we did a lot of talking. If you've got a website or you're advertising and you want to outpace the competitors, when people have your 6 competitors open, they're going to be glancing at each of their landing pages and or their advertising. These are the 6 things they're looking for. Is there a short, simple description of what the product is going to deliver and specifically how it'll solve my problem? If I buy it, can I get access to it and get value from it today? Is there social proof? Are there reviews? Are there things I can look at that are very specific to me that will say, yes, this is a good choice, go for it? Is there any scarcity? Is there a reason to act now? Is it running out? Is it on sale? What is it that makes me need to act now? Is there someone really authoritative that I know or that should know more than the average person that's backing up that this is the right choice? And finally, is there any incentive? Is there something I'm going to get for free if I act right now? Do all of those things in both advertising level and on the website level, and that's going to give you the best chance at stealing the customer. But Dan, just to give us an interesting segue, one of the interesting things out of this report was that even if you don't do any of those, and you are clearly the worst of the options in that buyer decision set, some people will choose you. That's staggering.
It's kind of hilarious, actually, but it's just statistics. There's a very little chance that if 1,000 people come to your website and they're looking at you versus 2 other competitors, that none of them are going to go for you. So the very act of showing up and being in front of your customers is really important. And that's why SEO is a great investment for me, because it keeps you front of mind. And it keeps them showing up to your website, going through, reading more information. And Josh, we disagree about this a little bit, but in my mind, SEO is a big authority builder too, for a couple of reasons. One, if someone searches for best golf clubs for sale in Melbourne, Australia, and there is a golf shop that comes up as the number one result, yes, it does put them front of mind, but it also signifies to people that they are a reliable source because Google has ranked them at the top. For me, that's a big authority booster.
I don't believe that once you're on the website, you're remembering that this was number one, because you've probably opened up five or six websites. But to give you credit, where I will agree is that if you're smart and your SEO strategy involves a whole heap of content creation and you're doing it well, that person's probably been exposed to a few articles and interesting things you've written from their SEO Google searching. And in that case, you're going to stand a head above the competition because they have read stuff about you before. We know that 7 brand exposures significantly increase trust and brand recall, and that's going to feed the social proof you're looking for.
Yeah, that's true. And I think part of why I see SEO as an authority builder is that SEO really can't be separate from the content strategy. SEO isn't just ranking number one. It's also all the content that you put on your site to rank you at number one, and that's all a part of the SEO process. So if they go in and they see all the great content that you've put out, then that's an aspect that gives you more authority.
Yeah, you know, look, you're absolutely right. I do want to just pull the conversation back slightly, though, to the section where we were talking about no matter if you're the worst solution out of the bunch, a percentage of customers will buy from you. This is a trap for business owners and marketing managers to think, well, we're getting some sales, we just need to advertise more. That is not the right thinking. That is specious reasoning at best. Have a think about these 6 measures of authority, if you will, to bring people through that messy middle and see what you can do to turbocharge your business. If you want to talk about it, by all means, get in touch with J Marketing. But we strongly recommend you download Decoding Decisions, the Messy Middle of Purchase Behavior, from our blog. We will have it linked below this podcast. Have a read and feel free to discuss the topic with us, because it is a really juicy one that's going to give you a lot of advantages if you apply it right.
Yeah. Well, I think that, yeah, anyone who leverages all that information is going to see a big impact in their business. So, Josh, thanks so much for bringing up that topic. This is really interesting, and I think really impactful information.
Yeah, welcome, Dan. Let's make sure we do a follow-up podcast on how this ties into the anxiety and friction in the buying process and exactly how people can move their websites and their advertising through that. As always, well hosted, and see you in the next episode.